October has been an absolute showstopper sports-wise. We got to see Bafana Bafana and the Springboks get the job done. Formula One became interesting again. The Proteas stood toe-to-toe with Pakistan away. The women's team got another World Cup semi. And the URC restarted, reminding us that the Sharks are still shite. Then oh so much to talk about in club football. Are Liverpool the new Man United? Are Man United the old Liverpool? Are Sunderland the new Chelsea? However you look at it, Arsenal are on top right now, and it looks good on them. For all this and so much more, strap yourself in for episode 69 of the On The Bounce show. It's our big October recap show. Let's get into it. Welcome to it. It is our first of our once-a-month shows that we're now going forward with this new format. With that, we have our established cast. To my left is Sandile, who is having a day. He's having a week. He's having a time.
Having a month. no, let's get Kate jump in before okay. I get into any celebrations.
Of course, Kate is now with us as well. She brings a hell of a lot more than what we do on
and
the
color.
Show.
I
firstly,
bring color
normal
face.
Civilian clothes.
What do you mean? Yes. The last time I was here, I was in civilian clothes.
Yeah. I know, but obviously your Liverpool shirt maybe isn't as as luring to you right
guys,
now.
Guys, it's only been 9 games. Like someone remind them, no one has ever won the league before Christmas. I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I mean like, you know, your team's going through a tough time right now. Wouldn't you want to double down and support them a bit more?
No.
Quiet on that side, but we got enough time for us to unpack what's been going on this month. I'm super excited to
Oh
do
my
it.
Goodness, that's literally the only thing you know. Like Man United, you are swinging mad from above Liverpool. It's 1 point. That's
my hate
what
watch,
looks
my
like.
Hate watch has been quite emotional in the past couple of days. You know, Pirates lost. Chiefs are going through to CAF. Who would have thunk that a penalty would have sunk Pirates? But we know we're here. We live to fight another day.
What, are you Pirates?
No, I'm Kaiser Chiefs, a real football club.
Oh, wow.
Club, yes,
Man United and Kaiser Chiefs. That makes sense.
We're back in business.
Makes sense. I'm okay. Happy for you. It's
absolutely,
1 point.
Absolutely not the intro. I was kind of just... but there is so much...
Leg it up for.
There is so much
Oh, please,
heat.
With that shirt, you set this up. You set this up.
Look, guys, I've been saying this for a while now. This is going to be the season. Hashtag tits. This is the season.
Yeah, tits.
The trajectory of Arsenal has been logical. Hard yards, headwind, minor victories, big losses. The team is hardened. The squad is ready. And what's playing out right now is beautiful. Flex, just I don't want to get into the stats just yet because we're still in the intro here. But Flex, you bring up a screen of just showing you the defensive prowess right now of Arsenal.
You know what? I can have this conversation with Ben. Like this one is fine. Ben, you are allowed to take this one. No one else but you.
So the reason I want to bring it up, Kate, is that Arsenal have played big teams, right? They had the loss to Liverpool, which I took on the chin. They beat Man United, another big team. They drew with City.
Let's not start on this tone, guys.
Big
please.
Team. But look at these stats. Shots faced per game this season, 8. Goals to shots faced, 0.074. 6 clean sheets. I just think that even if you're a neutral right now, thanks, Flex, it's a really great screen. Even if you're a neutral right now, the Premier League has never been better. I just don't think it
never
has.
Never been better. Oh, do you know what?
Right now, in a recent memory, when is the season held so much? Because as much as we can give Kate shit, Liverpool are Liverpool, right? They're not going away. Man City, thereabouts. Your team is now coming back to be a team again, not
it's
a meme
thing.
Generator.
Yeah.
And then there's like
let me pull up that
Bournemouth,
log.
Then Sunderland. There's Sunderland. Do you want to have a look at the log?
No, because like I
Flex,
can,
you want to have a quick little look at the log there?
I cannot believe.
Let's look at that log.
Yes, look where you are, Man United. Like, I cannot believe like this is somebody who's literally 1 point but look, above Liverpool and has such a big mouth.
And you know,
the only person allowed to have a the only person allowed to have a conversation about where this league might go is Arsenal, not you.
I think that's not fair. Okay,
it is very fair
because I don't want to get into this part of it. Who have we played? We've played Arsenal. We've played Chelsea. We've played Liverpool and we've played City in the first 9 games. So that part of that fixture is done now. Now we got to go pick up points as we've been doing.
So you are trying to tell
me... And Liverpool, with all their greatness, have lost 4, including the in Europe as well, on the trot at home.
Okay, so
their defense is more leaky than ours. That's the crazier part.
So you are saying a team like Bournemouth has only conceded 5 goals, looking at Sunderland's 4... 7, And then look at you. You're saying those are the teams that you're not worried about. I mean, you've struggled against Aston Villa in the past. No. Crystal Palace, you consider them a small team. Is that what you're telling me?
That's what I'm telling you.
Okay.
We've played the big five. We've gotten the points.
Big five. The only one in that big five, by the way, who's in the top four, is only Arsenal.
Okay, so I've got to give credit here. Well, credit is due that their original major rival is Brighton. They also beat them.
And let's look at where Brighton is.
All right, guys, look, we are going to go in through this because what we're going to do with this new format now is come together with a really sort of like high-density once-a-month show for you where we recap on all the major things. And there are so many major talking points. And I know most of you who watch the show or listen on podcasts only, you've got jobs, you've got families, you've got all kinds of other things. You might not be able to get into sport every single week. So we're going to do these really big wrap-up shows for you along with our usual features. And of course, we've got our SA20 shows that we're really excited about right now. So we've got so much to get through this week, guys. It's been actually a really interesting time since, Kate, you've been here. Yeah. We'll catch up with you and obviously your sporting life because Kate's out there actually playing things.
Yeah. She's out there.
Shifting things. So that's what we're going to do for the show today. And then we've got two interesting discussion points around some things that are sort of like murmuring in the weeds, so to speak. Cricket seems to be wanting to add a new format, Test 20.
My goodness.
And then rugby seems to want to have a rival league called the R360. So we have so much to get into for the show this week. We're going to show you one little insert that I created recently around the Ryder Cup. Another aspect I want to touch on with the show is going forward is amazing sporting travel for you to tap into or at least be inspired to do within the next few years. Because it's one thing us talking sports and talking about all these major things each and every month with you, but to get you closer to that, that's where I really want to go with the show as well. So, Ryder Cup, here we go.
When it comes to major, major sporting events to attend in your lifetime, the Ryder Cup absolutely is one of them, even if you aren't the biggest golf fan. I've been fortunate enough to go to both the European Ryder Cup and an American Ryder Cup, and I find it just absolutely mind-blowing how cool these events are. Now, if you were to choose between going to either one of them, I would suggest going to a European-hosted one, and the reasons for this are pretty simple. First up, the European one is just more affordable. I mean, the Ryder Cup is a pretty expensive experience, especially when traveling on the Rand, but the ones hosted in Europe are just slightly more doable. Next up, the crowds. European fans are the absolute best, with so many influences often spearheaded by jovial Irish fans. They become a draw card in themselves at these events. From the cheers to the general banter between shots, a true European Ryder Cup fan is also just an amazing guy to have a beer with. The Americans aren't as much. I mean, they have their own qualities and shouldn't all be grouped with the drunks that shout abuse at the players, but they just aren't what the Europeans are. There's a slight sub-dynamic here in that the American fans that do travel to the European events are slightly more enjoyable to be around and are more knowledgeable. But then that just stacks up to the argument that the European-hosted Ryder Cup is the one to really get to. Granted, I've only been to the last two, where it was at Marco Simeone and Bethpage Black, but the viewing experience at Marco Simeone was incredibly different and better than at Bethpage. As this is a massively popular event with tens of thousands of people converging on only a few holes of action per time, viewing will obviously be a little bit difficult. And you simply can't just follow people around the course. I mean, if you do, you'll live in a world of being three or four deep in the crowds. And even if you do get a spot near the action, once you get the players coming towards you, their sort of inside the ropes entourage are mostly going to block your view anyway. The other option is to then sit in the stands at various places in the course to try and get some action, but you're going to have to be there about 3 hours or 4 hours before just so you can get a spot, which naturally has its own drawbacks. The European Ryder Cup just seem to appreciate this more, with greater fan areas around the course, with accessible bar areas too, and natural collection spots with big screens, and atmospheres of their own wherever you're watching the play from. Anyway, whichever Ryder Cup you choose to go to, the first tier experience is an absolute must do. There is just nothing like it in golf, and I would argue there's actually few things in all of sport that can sort of match and rival the atmosphere here. These seats can either be paid for through special additional packages, or you can try and get there at the crack of dawn as the gates open and run for a spot. Another way of experiencing the first tee with general admission tickets is to camp out there in between the morning and the afternoon tee times. So basically, about 3 hours or so before the afternoon pairings go off, find a spot there and just sit and wait for all the action to happen around you. For the absolute best way to do the Ryder Cup, I reckon you need to make it a three-day adventure. Taking a practice round so you can get really accustomed to the golf course and obviously get good access to players. And then on either the Friday or the Saturday, do the first tee experience the way I described it. And then on the last day on the singles, now with all the knowledge you've got of the course and where to go, you can then follow the player a bit more because it is a bit more stretched out. I mean, obviously everyone is on the golf course at the same time. So Sunday is the one day where you can really cover on the course. Ryder Cup 2027, Adair Manor, that is your next chance to go to a Ryder Cup. It's going to be an island. It's going to be an incredible event. If you are looking to go or you want to get more information around this, follow me on my social media channels. I'm going to be creating more content pieces around the Ryder Cup and why you simply have to go to one of these in your lifetime.
Yeah, September was a huge month for me with all the travel. It really reminded me what we have in this country as far as like fans and really cool events. Yeah. But it also just reminded me that I'm either going to be either poor in life or just never own adult things because I want to keep doing trips forever and ever.
Yeah, your trips look crazy. Yours, and also I saw you hitting that bottle quite a bit, my friend. You've been wanting to get a detox.
Make it sound like that?
Respectful banner.
I mean, you were the one showing us evidence. No one asked you to.
Guys, look, my Instagram channel is, I feel my memory will go at the age of 70, 80. I'm just going to sit on a porch somewhere and just go through my Instagram jewels.
Look at your archive. You're giving proper influencer vibes, bro.
Living the life now that I can basically enjoy visually. Hopefully I can still see. Anyway, let's not digress here. Big month of October is is done basically. Yeah. We're going to recap it here on the show this week. Guys, Rugby Championship, we've got to start with that. So when the Rugby Championship started, the Box lost. They didn't look great.
Yeah.
I still remember that being at Benchwarmers for that first game.
Everyone like, what now?
It was a very weird vibe because people arrived thinking the Box are going to give them 30 points at Ellis Park.
Yep.
And we got hammered.
We got hammered.
Hands. Kate, what was your sort of big highlight for the Rugby Championship? Was it the sort of turnaround? Was it the way we finished? Was it where certain players kind of came to the fore?
Definitely the last quarter in Wellington. That has to be the game of the season.
Yeah.
And because when you look at that game in holistically, obviously what it meant after losing at Eden Park, I mean, this Box really had no chance at Eden Park. It was Adi Savia's 100th game. There's like such a mystical vibe with that stadium.
It was too much like emotion, maybe.
Right? Yeah. Like that's one of the games you kind of like, okay, if we can get close and maybe not lose with a bonus point, you're fine. You've done well. But like going to Wellington now and the stakes that way and on the line. And also you look at the way, I mean, it started with Rassie obviously announcing his team on a Monday and saying, here's me, do what you will with that information. I'm giving you 3 days to analyze what we're going to do. That was an epic move. Like if I'm not, I don't play chess, but I can imagine like psychologically that did something to New Zealand. And then you just have to go to the first 15 minutes of that game. I mean, look at that. That game, they lost Reinach in the first five minutes. Yep. Sasha was out. Yep. Diacha was out. Then by the end of that first half, Fassi was also out. That's your 9-10 second row and fullback. Which team can recover from that? And that's a team that didn't have no Pollard, no Eben, no Vili, no Akril, no Bongi, no RNC. None of these guys who had won the World Cup in the last cycle. So already, and to recover from that game, to recover from all of that, and then to go thrash New Zealand in New Zealand. Because they didn't just beat New Zealand like comfortably. It was thrashing.
It was a shell-shocking moment for the nation to literally be, the floodgates opened, as you say, with our sort of makeshift sort of team coming together.
Yeah.
Damien Willemse had to then go back to fullback.
Yes. What's his name? Ace Hazen had to come on earlier than maybe they anticipated. And mind you, I was at church during that game. It was after we recorded that last episode when I was here. And literally a day later, I was at a women's conference at church. I'm sorry, Pastor. But like literally I was watching the game, not listening to what was going on. I'm like, what is happening? What? Did we just lose? And I'm like, And I'm like, and so I'm trying not to be loud because it's a quiet moment and everybody else is listening to the preaching. And I'm like, what is happening? That was honestly the best game. I missed most of the first half, obviously watching it without volume. But like, then you watch the second half. And for me, that just reinforced what, because going back to what you're saying, like the first game against Australia, that was a bit different, was a bit confusing because what's going on. South Africa started dynamite, the kind of attack that they're looking for, like the structure they're looking for with under Tony Brown. They sort of like had it for like 10 minutes and then they went into their shell. It's like, it looked like a team that was unsure of what their identity is. But then in that game in Wellington, you had obviously Tony Brown and Rossi have found somebody who can actually marshal what they're trying to do in Sasha Feinberg.
Yeah.
In Reinach, like somebody I've been very critical of, Kobus Reinach has not
I
been...
I totally agree. He's come back like a second wind of note. Eh?
Like yeah. He's somebody... And my criticism of him has always been like how unsure he sort of... He used to second guess himself.
Yeah.
I find that every time there's a ball, he used to second guess himself. So I was not the biggest fan because of that. I mean, we've seen the caliber, where he can be and what it is. But in that game, you reinforce exactly what Tony Brown is trying to do, what Rossi has gotten these guys to buy into. So those two... And obviously Willemse as well. I mean, the way Reinach just like around the ruck, like to get the offload attack starting from him all the way to the forwards. That's somebody who understands what his game is. He's found his confidence and he's incredible. So for me, that was a turning point for the Springboks. Never mind the game against Argentina, Twickenham, where they were not their best, if we're being honest.
Yeah, it was a closer,
get over the hill type
of game. But also great teams know when to win even when they're not playing well. That's what a championship team is about.
Also, with the high of thrashing them like they did in Durban as well, it's very difficult to get the two things together. It's kind of like in golf. You don't shoot the course record and play well the next day. It's very hard to do that. But Kate, I mean, you touched on so many great things there, I think, which is the plan of the Springboks, right? They want a big squad for big players. That match was huge. If they went back-to-back losses against New Zealand...
That's game over.
That's like derailing a lot of what the Springboks are about. Because the Eden Park match was heartbreaking. It really was. They had to win in Wellington.
Yes.
So the guys who were left on the field, as you pointed out there, the bench was not used strategically. Empty. It was used out of necessity.
Absolutely. And also to step up when you are called out of necessity. Because, I mean, the plans was... Obviously, around the 30th minute before halftime or just after halftime, you get in the bomb squad, get all of that. Now, to have to change your plans within 5 minutes after losing your halfbacks, like that is incredible to be able to do that and come back, but also with the confidence. I mean, Marnie had these best, Marnie, like people who criticize Marnie, I always say you don't know rugby. That has to be.
You don't know enough of rugby to enjoy it the way you should, I think.
Absolutely.
Because if you also work it out, and I know it was a pre-World Cup game last time, but the two biggest wins, the Springboks over All Blacks, Marnie's been
a marshal.
Marnie's been the fly off.
Because that's the thing. It's like that's what I'm like. Most people, it's usually just like, oh, I'm watching his kicking game. I'm watching, can he convert the tries, can the penalties? And just like, that's like... minute part of rugby. The rest of the things that Marnie does, and you see the way the Springbok attack when he is a marshal behind it. It's incredible. As talented as Sasha is, and obviously he's going to be our number 10 pivot for a long time, respectfully, Marnie Lebok's game is incredibly unmatched right now.
It's a unique key that they have, and again, it goes into this whole thing of when we go to a World Cup with a squad of playmakers like that, there's a plan B or a plan C. You almost feel like teams like Ireland in the past, teams like France in the past, they've gone there, something hasn't worked, they haven't been able to pivot or shift.
Peak too early.
And that's why they haven't got a World Cup. Like, we can go there and we can have, sure, we can go into mini doldrums like you do. World Cups are very long, actually, when you think about it. I mean, like, the guys are on tour now and there's going to be 5 consecutive matches in November. That in itself is quite a long tour. But a World Cup and all that goes into it, you have to have plans B and C. And yeah, I think the Rugby Championship just proved the Boks have that.
I mean, they use about 50 players, 48 players in total. That's almost 50 in one cycle. Now, building that depth going to 2027, obviously hard choices are going to have to be made. You must not be sentimental about it. You know who can still have a World Cup in them. It can't be like someone like Ethan Hooker. Mm. Why did that sound wrong? Ethan Hooker. Like
you got it right, but it did sound weird.
It did sound weird. Why does that sound weird? Like, honestly impressed. Like, that's one of my favorite players out of this rugby championship. Great in the air. Somebody who has offered something that we haven't seen in a long time. Obviously, Jasper Visser, no question now. Number 8 going forward. That's it. That's
Please,
our
can
new
he
thought.
Be disciplined?
Well, yeah, but yeah. But like anyone else trying for that number eight jersey, I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, Rusty's also not picking any other number eights in the squad, Charlotte, Evan Rose. But I mean, that's a different thing altogether.
Evan Rose had his moment. He's just not as disciplined. And
yeah, he's looking good in the URC again. So, Shaz, I mean, obviously, Saturdays have been such a jewel with the box. The box are now back for these five matches. What are the things that you want to see most coming through from Rugby Championship? Now we're playing Northern Hemisphere because, again, the conditions change. This is what this team needs to do. We've got five matches. So we got Japan up front. Obviously, 100%. That's Rusty snuck that one in there because he wants the guys who maybe haven't played URC
to get some games in.
Exactly. France next week. That is just gigantic.
So, France is huge because it's such a grudge match. You know, we hardly get that game anywhere. So I know they're going to come out blazing because they still hurt for that World Cup. You know, we broke their hearts. So that is going to be interesting. And also to see what Rusty goes with in terms of young talent. Because the one thing about this Rugby Championship is the young talent actually stood out the most for me. And I actually felt so comfortable for Tony Brown, you know, because we've been very critical about Tony Brown and Rusty being out of sorts at some stage, especially after Australia.
Yeah, obviously, like not playing the moment. Look, the Ellis Park game.
Like not playing the moments.
Yeah, the Ellis Park game and how we played that match after being 20-0 up, basically.
Yeah.
I think hurts a lot of us and also confused a lot of us how we could be so loose.
Yeah.
But everything in the Rugby Championship in October kind of brought that back.
It brought it back to us. And now it feels like we're backing him a lot more, saying, look, there's a time and place. And there's a time to back it. And also for me, Sasha having that game, which is now like, okay, he is the guy for the future. That solidified it for me. You guys know how I feel about Manny Lubok. It's fine. He played well. He played great.
Oh,
and
my
I'm willing to put my hand up.
Don't tell me you are that guy.
No, I'm putting my hand up and say, guys, he did what he needed to do. And he has he never done what he needed to do?
Hold
on,
let me kick in Argentina. And it's still harboring it.
But, yo. He knows exactly. We were together that moment. But not one moment determines. For me, the confidence to come back and play at a high level and say, I'm going to kick this ball. For me, I said, Manny Lubok, I'd shout out to you.
As the coaches said, sorry to interrupt you. As the coaches had said, our post that game, even Sia said that, they had no business being in that position where they needed a kick to win that game in Argentina. They had that game in the bag for a long time. Now, come 89th minute and you needing money to kick. No. Like, no.
I saw Andre Pollard do that throughout the whole World Cup.
No, come on. He is that guy.
I mean, I saw Andre Pollard kick throughout the whole World Cup.
Mm. So if Monty Lubok turned out to be a Man United fan, would you give him more?
Shout out to him.
I'd be so disappointed if he is.
So, guys, on the back of this, right, the URC started.
Oh, can I?
Have you guys been invested in it so far? Is it still just a bit of a in-between area for it?
Can I give you, you know, my friend, I've got to give you, you know, some love on the URC. Shout out to your Stormers, bro. Big shout out to your Stormers. We've been through a big journey.
Out the gates.
And taking names. I think, you know, the Leinster game, I was like, what is going on here?
Which season have the Stormers not been?
No, we've had some trials and tribulations.
Last season, they were terrible in the first half. Yeah. They had to try and make a run at the end. They had left themselves far too much.
No, but what I'm saying, holistically, when you look at the entire season, haven't the Stormers always been the better team for South Africa since the URC started? Every year.
But I think they start.
They won it that first year, unexpectedly. Yeah. Second year, runners-up. Third year, started not so well, but finished well.
Tapering a bit. But yeah, I mean, like, it's just the way that they've started. It's the points difference. Mm. Because Leinster, as much as they're never going to send their strongest team to SA, they're not a 35-0
not a zip
win kind of
clean
team.
Sheet.
Arsenal Leinster.
Yeah, you know. Oh, hectic. No, but I wanted to give you that love because we're always critical of the Stormers. They start. So it gives them a nice platform for them to move forward. I just hope they don't pick up too many injuries with all the rugby that's been played.
Kind of what it comes back to. But I mean, it is exciting. It's been a slow start for me outside of that. Obviously, the drama around the Bulls, the Jan Hendrik Wessels, I don't even know how to get into that. 9 weeks for a guy with no prior offenses, even if he is guilty of grabbing the guy's nuts, there's no video evidence. 9 weeks? Give him like four even. It would be like, you know what?
Yeah, that would feel like half a season for him.
Yeah.
Nine
weeks is a heavy
nine angle. Matches.
What did Visa get?
Four or five?
No, it was more. Didn't he get eight?
Okay, but video evidence and quite like...
Yeah.
Hardcore.
No, that was incredible.
It does bother me a little bit, and I feel like that's kind of marred. It was actually a decent start to the URC. I mean, the Bulls were decent on the road.
Yep.
The Sharks,
Oh, the Sharks, bro.
The Sharks are the Sharks. I mean, like, I think it was Daryl, I forget this guy's name now, on X. He said, like, let's just make peace with the fact that the Sharks are basically a clubhouse for our box so they can stay and live in SA. It was such a pertinent point.
And we have this conversation about the Sharks every season with all the talent that they have, with all the Springboks that they have. They can never put it together on the field in club rugby.
It's always rebuilding. It's tiring. It's
so strange.
There's no cohesion. Well, guys, struggling with combinations. So it's literally every season.
I tell you what kind of bothered me. I think it was the Ulster match where you saw my Pimpy and Vincent Koch getting cards. Crucial times, right?
Mm.
These are senior bucks. These are experienced guys. And rugby's a very technical and difficult game. When it comes to tip tackles and stuff, you might say mitigating factors, whatever, whatever. But you're getting carded for doing things that you know you should not do. At critical times in the game, you look at the Sharks, as much as I don't think Plumtree's the guy for the role, I don't think he's getting a good tune out of those Oaks, simple as that. Mm. Imagine you're looking at a player doing things like they did. And you go, guys, what are we doing here?
Yeah, you can't coach that. You
can't coach
that,
exactly.
Yeah. And what's even worse about some of the players that you've mentioned is that some of them are fighting to get back into a Springbok squad. So you're ill-disciplined, you're not playing at a high level, a lot of drop balls, and you got the Springbok guys who come back to the URC and playing incredibly. So the Sharks, I don't know where
the
line is.
Not the Sharks Springboks playing incredibly. They don't. They just don't. It's almost like they don't know how to put on a Sharks jersey anymore. And for me, I remember a time, it was a Curry Cup. There was a time Curry Cup used to be played during the time the Springboks are away, and a lot of the young guys would play those games. I mean, on the back of the success of the Bulls, literally their juniors would carry them to the semifinals, and then the senior guys. Your Victor Matfields, your who's the best number nine in the world?
Those guys
would come back just before the final, and then suddenly the Bulls would. I would love for the Sharks to just adopt that and be like, okay, it's nice that Sia and all of them, you guys are here, whatever. I mean, obviously it goes with the contract that they have with SA Rugby. But like, I would utilize the young guys and just get the best out of your Fares and Butters, get the best out of your Pepsis.
But this is the dynamic now. That was Curry Cup, where granted it's lower stakes. When you're playing URC, it's really high.
No, but also if you've got these young guys who are trying to stake a claim at a certain number jersey in the Sharks team, then you might get something out of them. Because it's not working. That's the thing.
Okay, so
nothing is working.
So to your very point, is there a better coach that could probably motivate those guys, know when to take those chances, and know, because this is what makes it difficult, right? You look at the guys and go, I want experience, I want the form, these guys are getting paid the most money, I want the most out of that guy. But you've got to be able to judge character, and I think maybe that's what's not happening at the Sharks. You've got young Oaks who are pounding the bags, doing all the work in training, and then the older guys are kind of like,
in.
I mean, I don't know, I'm speculating here.
Yeah.
But I think it takes a very keen eye. It takes a dynamic sort of coach to take the risks with that. It's okay. I mean, I totally agree with you. I would just love to know, what is the gulf between your established international, you will pick on reputation, come 50-50, and the up-and-coming guys who want to stake a claim? Because people keep saying, there's that Sharks team with 17 Springboks in the squad, blah, blah, blah.
It's always a talking point. It's just, something has just gone wrong there. Man.
It's a talking point. It's not
something
a,
has gone
it's
wrong.
Not a winning point.
It reminds me of, and Pumim Bangwa, I used to tease him about this every season. He knew I was going to bring it up. The RCB team, what is it called? Royal Challenge Bangalore, yep. IPL, which had AB de Villiers, Chris Gayle, and
Curley,
who won nothing together. Nothing.
Too much talent, not enough anger to win.
Every year, that was a team hyped to win. That was a team hyped to. That was a team to beat. Every single season, I think four seasons in a row, those guys were together, won zilch together.
Yeah, I think Plumtree, I hate to say it, I think he got to go.
Plumtree wouldn't have done well in the IPL either.
Yeah.
Guys,
I am saying nothing about Plums. I like Plums, so I'll leave it at that.
Good Oaks are good Oaks, but, you know, you've got too much talent for you guys not to be doing better. That's ultimately the point that we're all trying to land
Does
on here.
The Sharks need a Hugo Bruce kind of guy.
He's
going to come in there.
Your pivot, my brother.
I mean, look, let's be honest, because when we look at Bafana and those kind of things, you need a guy who can just embrace a culture, whatever it may be. I'm not saying Plumtree doesn't work because he's a Kiwi. He spends so much time in Durban.
He's basically more South African than he's a Kiwi.
Exactly. So it's not good to do with the fact he's in New Zealand or anything like that. Mm. You just simply need a guy, no matter who his background, where it is, come in, look at the team, have a vision and go. And guys, that does bring us into Bafana, because it was so great to see how that happened. There was the drama. There was the point deductions. There were all those things. Come that last round.
Oh, this is our bounce back, baby.
When you guys watched it, did you feel any tension? I was relaxed. Granted, it was the six Guinnesses after the golf day I was at.
I was stressed.
I was stressed.
Were you stressed?
I was, everyone was. Ben, we just felt that once again we're back in Bafana Matt's era.
No, Nigeria's. I didn't take it that far.
Yeah, I was shook.
You know what? For me, it felt like that England game against the Springboks England game, the World Cup. Was it the quarterfinal?
The word was just everything was too touch
and go. Was it semi?
England in the semis, yeah.
Semi. Not even the France game. The France game was rough on the spirit. But the England game, that's the one that took us out. That Bafana Bafana game for me had been pins and needles like that game. I was like, no. Not because of the calculator. I was confident Nigeria were going to win. I was just like...
See, that's the Bafana match I was shook off.
Okay, so were you confident that Nigeria were going to win?
So my thing was...
Because it was a big factor for me. I felt the same, Kate. I was like
Nigeria's going to win
this
game.
Plan for us?
Yeah, absolutely. And also because for them, as much as we needed them to win, they needed to win for themselves even more. Because we still had a chance whether we lost, whether we didn't win or not. Not lost, but everything was riding on their win. They had to win. Otherwise, the odds would have been far against them.
I want to give Benin a lot of credit because they went down to the wire and nobody actually really believed how good that program is. You know, Benin, they can put their hands up. They took them 9 games. They were on the top of the log and it's just that last game to get over the hill. Benin gave us a tough time. And then also that month of October, I was so nervous about football because we drew against Zimbabwe at home. They had a red card. We hit the post twice. I was just like, is this how we go out? But then in true Hugo Bruce fashion, he said, you know what, guys, let's close it up nice and early. And also, guys, the clean sheets that Bafana are getting is probably for me the most impressive thing about our team is because we're not leaking. As long as we don't leak, we'll be fine, you know?
Yeah.
Enterprising up front.
Yeah.
Great.
It's such a good point, and it's what Arsenal are underpinning right now. You base success on clean sheets.
Yeah, you know, defense wins championships. And
I don't agree with you more.
And for me, what's exciting about what Hugo Bruce has done and something I always give him a lot of credit for is that you earn the right to play in a Bafana jersey.
It's so good to reinstall that.
Yeah, no matter how big you are, no matter what team you play for, no matter if you're an international, we have gotten most of our talent through the PSL.
Yeah.
And that is a huge credit to, one, how far the PSL has gone, and the belief in Hugo Bruce saying, guys, I know we've got a lot of international talent, but I've got a system that runs throughout.
Absolutely.
And for me, he's probably going to go down. And he said he's going to retire after the World Cup, but he will go down as one of the greatest SA footballing coaches for taking a stance once against SAFA, instilling a system that goes throughout. Because you can see that between the development leagues as well. All our international teams are playing in one system. They're going deep into tournaments. They're hardly getting knocked out, and that talent is moving. So for me, Hugo Bruce, biggest, you know, changed how people feel about South African football. We're going to the stadium. Full.
I mean, that is a really good point. And to give credit to Bruce, absolutely, because he's instilled that, like, you earn your jersey and you keep it for as long as you perform and do your work. But also credit needs to go to the former technical director, Walter Steenbock. That's somebody who's... You mentioned the juniors, you mentioned the women, you look at women's football as well. Like the structures he was able to employ while he was there. Yeah. Like it's we're gonna reap the benefits of that for years to come. Because you look at the under-17s at the World Cup, look at the under-20 winning AFCON after Bafana Bafana came third at AFCON, and they go all the way to perform as well as they did at the under-20 World Cup. So that just goes to the structure has been able to instill and able now to feed all these young guys to Hugo Bruce or whoever the next coach will be. So I do think a lot of credit needs to be given to him as well. But as you mentioned, man, there was one game where Lyle Foster was the only player not playing the PSL in the starting 11. And you're like, that is incredible. Huge. We'll no longer look down at our own league.
Burnley's Lyle Foster, yeah. he's in a good place. No, he's not playing some Russian like club
somewhere.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And to be able to have all these guys who Bruce has entrusted to start in your starting 11, it comes from your own league. It's exciting to watch. You know, sitting at home, you're like, The next World Cup, we're buying jerseys. We're no longer going to adopt Ghana, who we've loved for a long time, buying a Spain jerseys, a Germany, all of that. We are there. We are within, guys.
We are there. I'll bounce back.
You know, likes of Mudau, like that guy, for me, probably one of the standout players, the confidence he has. You look at someone like Modiba, you know, the way he's played, and you think of where he's come from. Starting in, he was somebody was discovered. What are those talents? I almost say those talent shows. The net banking or now,
yes,
whatever.
Yes.
He was discovered through that. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then you look at somebody like Sibisi, who's grown as a leader. And then obviously Ronan Williams, man, and the way he's been able to make the youngsters feel comfortable. Your Mbattas go into that team knowing that they will be welcome with open arms. There's no big egos in that team. Like, it is incredible. Mshishi, like the way Bruce has revitalized
and embraced him, even with him being injured.
Yes, he's still part of the team. Like it reminds you of the structures you've seen in the Springboks. That just because you're not in the match day 23 doesn't mean you're part of the team. Even if you just said you carry water. Yeah. Like you saw Mshishi throughout and you're like, oh, he's injured, but he's part of this team. It's been really amazing to see. It's our bounce back. I am so excited.
The turnaround of Bafana, to think about where we were 4 years ago and we took over, it's huge.
He's taken us 20 places in the FIFA rankings.
Yeah. So which is amazing. One cycle. Because again, like if you don't know too much about football, that means a lot because those increments are hardcore. Hey? Like in rugby, what, there's like 12 teams basically?
Yeah.
In football, cheaper. That top 100 will take you. Yeah. It's the most competitive sport in the world, basically. Yeah. If you haven't quite worked it out, today's show will be slightly longer.
We can do a Bafana show, guys.
You know what? Like, just to wrap up with Bafana from like a side that I'm noticing is that I can listen to the two of you talk about this animatedly and it's exciting. But like some of my friends who aren't football fans, traditional Boko Oaks, guys that like a draft, a test match cricket, they don't really know too much about it. Mm. How excited they are about the World Cup because they've wanted to cheer Bafana the way they cheer the Springboks, the way they cheer the Proteas. But it was always hard because Bafana weren't really in the mix in tournaments. They physically weren't there.
Yeah.
Or it was like, okay, well, we're playing AFCON, but we got no chance. These guys are going to AFCON now in December. As in, like, they're going there as a team people are going to watch.
Yeah. Going there some good favorites.
I've just seen it amongst different fan groups. It's like people are so excited that they can give the same attention and fondness to the Bafana now.
But also, like, to change the culture, Ben, like, this is what I usually do because I also have a lot of friends who don't necessarily watch local football. So they don't really know who Bafana are. And for me, my thing has always been like, if you have an interest in EPL, there's no reason you can't have an interest in PSL.
Right.
And this is how you actually break into those households. Take them to the stadium. My cheat code was BitVisVids. Guys, when BitVisVids was still a team, because BitVisVids is like, it's almost like being at UCT. Remember Ikey's? Ikey's Stadium. Everybody's just here.
They're on campus,
That was BitVisVids for me. I'm like, oh, you want to watch a game? It's a small stadium. It's easy accessible in Johannesburg. Take them to a BitVisVids game. They'll always be packed because the students are there. The mandate was, hey, you go watch your team and you stay there for however long. So it was always an easy one. You take them to a Pirates Sundowns game at Loftus. They'll never not want to watch PSL
again. That's coming up soon. Yeah, it's
great.
That's a game. You just take a couple of mates there and be like, you don't have to know who's who, but just watch football. Don't take them to FNB Stadium when it's not a derby. Obviously, that's going to be discouraging because like two of you at the stadium. You're not going to enjoy that atmosphere.
Yeah.
But go if you can. Target the big games. Unfortunately, they don't play at Ellis Park anymore and things like that. But like those would be the stadiums. You kind of like slowly introduce your friends who enjoy the EPL and see they can actually invest in Bafana by starting at watching the PSL games.
Yeah, you're so right. It's a big journey. It's not just about finding the game on TV. You watch like if they're in AFCON or whatever.
Mm.
I was actually having this chat with a good mate of mine last night. Like he doesn't watch football because it's a time thing as well. You know, like people have time for rugby only, or they're going to watch the tennis grand slams, or they're going to watch the golf majors. But for me, I've said this many times on the show, the last year football has given me more than any other sport because it's like I'm finding this whole new world.
I'll see it at Orlando Stadium, Benjamin.
I'm finding this whole new world of conversation with people I wouldn't ordinarily talk to. I can talk to anybody now because football is a language. It's so much more than the sport.
And I just want to just touch on the local football. This is probably the greatest era of SA local football because we're competing on the continent at such a high level.
Yeah.
So there's a time now to get into it. I mean, we've spoken about Stellenbosch. We've spoken about Pirates, Chiefs, Sundowns. Continentally, these are now becoming giants of the league and making deep runs, except Pirates. Big shout out to your L. I ain't forget about you guys.
Pirates oh my going goodness. Down. I mean, Chiefs look, fans.
It was quite spirited for them to come back. Against the team from the Congo, they were 3-0 down. They scored the three goals to get them the penalties. They lost out on
penalties.
And he shanked it, bro.
Sundowns hammered Remo. Yeah. So they threw. And then the Confed Cup.
Yeah, yeah, you Stellies. Saw. And also, my team Stellies also hammered a team 3-0 as well. So we're in business. We're in
oh,
business.
My goodness.
So, guys, look.
Chiefs fans.
Look, to not make this a 10-hour episode.
Yeah.
But we got to touch. Okay, Premier League.
Yes, sir.
Kate, I'm not going to talk about Arsenal. I don't need to. The numbers are there.
The numbers are there.
7 points below Arsenal is a team, your team, Liverpool. Mm. Are you worried though? I mean, look, I don't want to make this about like me slinging mud, even though, as you said, my team is eligible.
Slinging mud is my term. No, I love that. I don't know where I got that.
But like after the first four games, things were looking pretty good. The guys were kind of showing a bit of momentum. They just beaten Arsenal with a wonder goal, because that's how you only beat Arsenal. It's the lucky goals. But I mean, like, are you worried though? I mean, like from a team that's maybe struggling to get the new signings in, on a slot, second season sort of predicaments. Is there room to worry?
Can I tell you why? I don't know if I'm worried, but can I tell you why I'm not necessarily worried? Hang on. This guy. Like,
I think,
okay, so subjectively, okay, let me say subjectively, I'm not concerned, and I'll tell you why, right? Because Arnislot's first season, I feel like subjectively that emotion was invested in there. Like the I'm not sure if he's going to do anything. He's just got here. Like the low expectations. I think that was my mind as a fan. That in 2020, the last previous season, that's where I invested my mind. I was like, ah, whatever. Every time we win a game, it's like, oh, that's nice. Hey, hang on. You know what I mean? But now, objectively, I'm a little concerned for Liverpool, right, as a club. When you think of from the outside, you're not looking in now as somebody who was invested in the club, emotion, whatever. When you look objectively, the first time Liverpool lost, you're kind of like, okay.
It happened.
You know, no team goes unbeaten. Because even last season, they were beaten, and then they were able to learn from that and recover. Second time, you're kind of like, okay, something's, that's a blip. Third time, okay, hang on, what's going on? And also the fact that they're not learning from those mistakes. I think that for me is what's concerning. If you watch objectively, that's what's concerning. Now it's like there's a blueprint now on how to beat Liverpool. Make sure they concede first, and that's it. Liverpool doesn't know how to recover. And the game against Brentford, that was, it's almost like you expected them to lose, and that's terrible to go for the defending champions. The game against Chelsea was a surprise. Crystal Palace, you're like, whoa, this is a shock. Brentford, the last game. You're like,
You're missing one surprise.
No, whatever. No, okay. One, no.
You've mentioned so many games. There's one key one.
Just let me finish. So yeah. Brentford, there was zero surprise. And I think for me, it's the way that Brentford went into that game. First of all, Brentford is a team that thrives on set pieces. Now, if your goalkeeper gives away a cheap, like the first goal,
yep.
It gives away a free throw in. Like in the first half, in the first 10 minutes of the game, when you've seen your team, that's where the Achilles heel is. Like for me, I think that's what's shocking. Like the fact that they're not learning from those and also giving away. They're not, you expect a manager to be saying, okay, and this is what he used to say last season, is that he obviously there's a way that Liverpool wants to play, but every game is changed according to who they play against, right? Now you feel like you don't have a plan for Brentford. This is how Brentford have played their games throughout the last two seasons. Oh. They are a game that it will attack, give them a set piece, they will most likely score. So how do you counter that? You make sure that certain things are in place. And that for me, that's where the concern is. You feel like Arne Slot does not have a plan against certain teams like he used to. Every game you used to talk about how we play different for Arsenal. We play different against Man United. It's different against City because they're not the same team. And suddenly they're playing the same way and they are being beaten the same way. So that for me is a concern. That said, I don't think league has ever been won in 9 games. So
No, it definitely hasn't. But I mean, 7 points is quite a gap between you and the top team. Are you worried about the summer signings not gelling? Are you worried that there may be these guys who are absolute superstars on paper and definitely superstars in the checkbook maybe aren't quite what Slot needs?
And for me, this Liverpool team and the signings, it's sort of like you look at a team like Brazil, international Brazil. There's a lot of names there and you have to create your team around who? Because your team against your style of play against Salah is not necessarily the same as Wirtz. It's not the same as Ekitike. It's not the same as Isak. So it's like there's just too many people to play around. Whereas last season you didn't have any of that. You gave the ball to what's his name, Gravenbach, and he made things happen. You know what I mean? Now, even you look at this, just so many. I don't know what's a plan. I think that's also concerning things. What is a plan for all these superstars? Ekitike is literally the only signing that is shown up, and now you've made someone like Mo Salah look average.
Well, that is
concerning.
That is concerning. And it'll only frustrate the senior players like that because they become accustomed to doing well, but now they're almost second guessing themselves. When your spine and your stalwarts and your foundations are like that.
I mean, what glimpses of Mo Salah is against that goal you scored against Brentford. That's the Mo Salah we know, but where has he been? Where has that guy been? And has that come down to your manager, or is it just too many of these superstars in your team, and now you don't know what the plan is?
I think it is.
Yeah. But for me, what's concerning is the fact that I feel like there's just no plan. There's no plan. Like, I used to watch religiously. I used to watch the press conferences with Arne Slot last season because I was like, who is this guy? I've never seen him. I don't know what his style is. So what is his approach? And literally every game, it was like, we have a different plan for different teams. And I love that. Now it feels like you have one plan and it's not working.
And the knee-jerk changes.
Exactly, because
behind
every team now knows how to beat Liverpool.
Yeah,
concede first, make Liverpool concede first, and you have them.
Well, Shaz, I mean that's what Man United did. They scored in the first minute.
Yeah, let me jump in onto Liverpool's Liverpool's issues coming through from this transfer window.
Maybe this is a part two episode.
The one thing that Trent did for Mo Salah was give him a lot of coverage. And that's what we're seeing now. Mo Salah now has to run back, and he's not used to all of that. And also, at his age, he can't be playing all those games. That's the big issue. They haven't adjusted to bring in somebody to cover for Trent. Virgil has also looked incredibly slow. He's getting beaten in the air, which is something we've never heard of. And like
he's
you said...
He's too concerned with refs.
He's concerned with refs. He's not confident in his back line. So you can see him overcompensating for somebody and then a leaker goal somewhere else in his position. And then you've added Isak in, who doesn't necessarily give you the legs to cover for Mo Salah. So it's very top-heavy, and you guys are leaking goals that we've never seen Liverpool leak. For me, it's concerning because the losses are at home. You know,
well, they must have been away, haven't they?
Yeah. But they lost three on the trot, including the Champions League game.
No. Champions League would... We thrashed him very nicely.
It was Galatasaray, the first loss.
Yeah. But that was also away, wasn't it?
No, that was at home.
Was that at Anfield?
That was at Anfield. Oh, okay. Right.
Chelsea game was at Anfield, and our game, the Man United game, was in Anfield. Yeah. And those are things that generally don't happen, where your form is meant to be run by your home record. And you're leaking so many goals. That's the main concern. It's not like a 1-0. It's a 3-2. It's a 2-1.
Mm.
It's like you're not defending the ball. And like you said, they're killing you with a long throw. I mean, we know the strategy now is a long throw. We all learned that from Set Piece FC. You know, we got to make sure that we throw in, you know, corners and, you know, long throws. So, you wanted to move on to Man United. Let's talk about the resurgence of this year, Man United.
Resurgent after 9 games. Well, may I please remind you?
I feel like renaissance is going to be out of his mouth just now.
You know,
what's changed?
Three on the trot. You know, winning is addictive, like I've always said. You know, when you're winning, a lot of things, you know, up the way. And I think confidence in their system and able to adjust. We're shoring up a little bit at the back, which is the biggest issue that we had. And guys are scoring goals. You know, we starved for goals last season, hitting the post, doing all of these things. And it feels like they're backing Ruben again. They said, guys, I know it's only 3 games on the trot, but in the EPL with everyone drawing, winning, losing, these 3 games that we've won have been huge because we played Chelsea. We played Liverpool. And those are big stops to get. You know, a lot of people have said it.
Stop forgetting Brighton in recent history. That's a big one for you guys.
Yes, yeah, it was. Yeah, Brighton been Danny Welbeck almost again. Another free kick goal. You know, Danny Welbeck. And that record against Brighton is horrible the last 4 games, you know. But I think there's a backing of that. And being 6th now, and with a relatively softish fixture list, because we had the hardest fixture list, guys, in the EPL, guys. It goes without saying.
Aston Villa, you've never let me down. Crystal Palace.
Other people dropped points where they did not need to drop points. We lost against City, convincingly.
To be
we lost against Arsenal, convincingly. We beat Chelsea and we beat Liverpool. Guys, those are very tough games to play in the first nine, ten games.
To be fair, if you look at the last three, four seasons, Liverpool have conceded the most against the smaller teams.
They gave us 7-0.
So I'm just saying, for me, I wouldn't... But it's fine. No one wins the league, like I said, in December.
But you build momentum.
You do. You absolutely do.
Kate, you are absolutely right. It is only 9 games, but I just think that a lot has been shown in 9 games. Because 9 games is still a decent time period. And again, you're right. We've still got to go through the silly season of December where there's lots of games back-to-back. They pump those things in there. Squads get tested. Sunderland, what are they going to do? Bournemouth, what are they going to do? Is someone else going to put in a bit of a spanner? Like, I just think the Premier League has never been more exciting and more engaging. And 100%. Again, like the certain talking points, like it's just fantastic. The way people see Crystal Palace as a tough team. Aston Villa, I mean, sure, they lost to Go Ahead Eagles or whatever that team was called in Europe.
Yeah.
But I mean, they just beat City.
And exactly. They show up against City. They show up against a big four.
It's a very competitive sporting league. Forget about football. As a sporting league spectacle goes.
It feels like it's back.
Cheapest, the weekends are good, hey?
Exciting.
It's just, and this month really, really proved it. I know there's been a lot of international breaks and we've lost a bit of momentum. But when the Premier League gets together, and this is the only thing I would say about the PSL that we struggle with here, is that there isn't ever going to be as many competitive teams because it's a resource thing. We know that. Yeah. They'll have their own nuanced competition, but ultimately at Sundowns in the top, Pirates are hoping. But this Premier League season, this Premier League in general.
It's not even in conversation.
Yet. Guys, we have to move on to cricket because obviously we'll start with the Women's World Cup, Kate. Again, it's like the way I look at it, we saw it in the Women's World Cup rugby as well. Yeah. There's a lot of spirited teams, but then you get the established teams have been playing for a long time. Mm. That's kind of how it's going to work. I know Canada went very far, but like England, New Zealand, there's inevitability about it. We saw South African ladies do so well, so spirited, up against one of the bigger teams, and it's just a different game. I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like the Women's World Cup cricket has been very similar. The ladies started out against England, got hammered, and then it was like, take a deep breath, we're not terrible overnight. They did so well for the rest of the tournament. And then came up against Australia, and again, it's this absolute brick wall of like brute force. They're in the semis, they're going to play England again. Obviously, with time of filming, it'll be shortly after this. We don't know the result.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's still progress, right? Like, it's still, they're getting there. They're still playing big situations. Sure, they're having speed bumps. But this team is still moving forward, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, great teams learn from their losses more than they do their wins. True. And that England game, especially, I mean, I do think England have a psychological advantage going to the semifinal, considering how well they won. Because that's the thing, is the game against India was probably one of the Proteas' best game.
Great to watch.
Wasn't that the highest run chase throughout the tournament, and they successfully chased it down. And that was when everybody showed up to the party. Yes, someone like, what's her name, finished a game, but she wasn't great with the ball, so she almost like had to make it up later on. So that was really amazing. Everybody just stepped up to the plate. You make one mistake here, you fix it there. Everyone just showed up. And then you see the game against Australia, who... They beat Australia convincingly the last World Cup, the T20 World Cup, and that was a game that they targeted, and then they faltered against New Zealand. So it's a lot of psychological testing going on in this team. But man, the way, because I listened to the girls after the last World Cup, the T20 World Cup, and you see how disappointed they were. And this is the one they looked at. This was the one, like, okay, we're going to get our revenge on this game. So, I mean, in this tournament. So the game against England, I'm worried, but I know they know what they're capable of. And also the fact that England goes into this team with that psychological advantage, or we beat them before, they may actually rest on their laurels. I mean, they're worried about somebody like Sophie Elkiston. They don't know if she's going to be playing. That's their prime spin bowler. And Sophie doesn't do well against spin, so that's going to be a concern. Definitely, if she's playing, then South Africa, that's definitely the person they need to watch out for. But I do think all round, Laura Volvart, they've got their team. They've got a well-established team. And it won't be a shock if they beat England. I think that's probably where we are now, is that South Africa can comfortably beat England. And it's not like, oh, my goodness.
So, Shaz, I think you might appreciate this. We obviously had a big focus when we had Alan Donald here about the 1992 World Cup.
Yep.
And again, going back to like time frames of where sports are, like I don't watch a lot of women's sport because first and foremost, I just don't have the bandwidth because of all the things that I do and all the things that I try specialize in. But there's something quite beautiful about where I think women's cricket is right now. Go back to 92. The guys that were playing, they were absolute pioneers. They didn't have reference points. It wasn't like the guy before me did this.
Yeah.
The team before me did this in a time of adversity. So the women's team is kind of still making headway there by themselves because they haven't got the generation where an ex-player is now a captain slash coach slash mentor to the younger ones coming through. The primaries are still playing. Still
in the system, yeah.
So they're still figuring it out. And to prove this point, Gareth Cliff, who does not watch sport, okay, and he tells me that sport is useless, I'm not sure why. He told me the other day, he's unprovoked and unquestioned, he's like, that Women's World Cup's actually really cool. I can understand it. The speed and how things work, it makes sense. I actually really enjoyed it. And he told me out of the blue that he watched this.
That's nice.
The way I look at these World Cups now, it's like, yeah, sure, they get thrashed by the big teams at like really pivotal moments. But the learnings, Kate, as you say, from the losses, where this goes to generation two now. Because look at the men's Proteas team. We're on like generation 10 and 11.
And they had to go through those humps.
When you really think about it. 92 World Cup, we all know we got to the semis and we just didn't have the bottle. Duckworth Lewis, whatever it was back in those days. We just didn't. We lost England in the group stages and we lost again in the semis.
Damn you,
England. Going through this now and it's just a different time frame.
I think there's a bounce back, bro. I think because you've lost to England, I think the gap of how much we lost to England initially is closer. So I think it's going to be a lot more competitive in the semi-final. So I really am like this on it, on the time of recording, and I think we'll get over the hump. But either way, they get better for the next tournament. That's what's exciting about this team, is that they take their learnings and they put it again. From the last World Cup to this World Cup, you could see they got significantly better. You know, there's a lot of continuity.
Yeah, look,
there's a lot of, you know, retention of talent. And improving on things like fielding that we've always been critical about, and not dropping unnecessary wickets in the clutch, because that's where you win the World Cups, you know, and you beat the big teams.
Depth in this team as well, man. Yeah. When you look at how many players record 50s and above in one game, it's exciting to see. And I mean, the game against England, yes, it was terrible, but they've grown teeth since then, you know. Yes, the game against Australia, kind of like, okay, what the hell, guys? But you watch the other games and the manner in which they thrash the other teams. Like, keep going back to that game against India. India at home, the pressure, you know, like the expectations against an Indian team that is hosting a World Cup, is not one World Cup. Now, I mean, they're facing Australia, defending champions in the other semi-final. That's going to be exciting. That's definitely... Ooh, like, I'm excited. Whenever I think about the Proteas women's team, I'm very excited. And also how much each player takes responsibility for their own game. It's,
You
drop a ball here, I'm going to fix it there.
Okay, I mean, just the way they batted against Pakistan was my clear takeout. Because again, like for me, women's cricket isn't as entertaining because there's not as much like high-octane performance action. Mm. But the way they batted against Pakistan, it's like, hey, we can actually give this a good rev.
Yeah.
And that's what, again, it's generational steps that go through. Suddenly, we can push the run rate here, whereas in the past, it would be, we're going to our shell, we'll just try to work the percentages. They clapped it against Pakistan. And I think all these different gears are getting into this. So look, speaking of cricket, obviously, we got the Betway SA20 coming up December the 26th. If you are following us on social media, which I'm kind of guessing you are at this stage, we are giving away tickets to the first home match that does take place. So whether your team is the Sunrisers Eastern Cape, whether they're the Paarl Royals, Joburg Super Kings, wherever it is, if you go onto our social media post and then comment what your team is, you can win two tickets to the first home game. Now, my first home game, Shaz, New Year's Day. And to get extra excited about this, I had a sit down with Jono Leaf-Wright, who is the supremo of Lions cricket, all cricket up here at the Wanderers. And I had a little chat with him about the stadium, because Wanderers Stadium is actually a bit of a, it's going through a sort of renovation in the greater scheme of things. SA20, we're going to see the new lights come in. And it's always just such a great cauldron for SA sport. It really is. So I had a little sit down with him this week just to kind of discuss the stadium and what to look forward to with the Betway SA20.
So it's Jono Leaf-Wright sitting here at the iconic Wanderers Stadium in Johannesburg as we look forward to season four of the Betway SA20. What an exciting time it is for cricket in our country again. An exciting time to be South African, to be a sports lover, when you get to sit in this iconic stadium in the heart of Johannesburg, where over 30,000 people are going to come and enjoy the SA 20 Season 4. Going to come and support the home team, the Joburg Super Kings, and qualifier number 2 here at the back end of January. It's certainly, as you can see, a time of revamp, a time of refresh, a time of reset as our stadium lighting is down. We are building some new pylons and getting the new LEDs up, which SA 20 will have the benefit of enjoying, and certainly the fans will. The energy, the excitement, the brand of cricket that Betway SA 20 brings to this country is something which we've seen benefit our game both domestically and internationally with the success of our teams. And certainly hosting 6 matches here at the Wanderers in the heart of Johannesburg is something that we're excited about as we move into season 4. That grass embankment undoubtedly is going to be packed with thousands of people again, thousands of families, children running around, children trying to get autographs from their hero, whichever team they may support. And corner over there with the jacuzzis is going to be a great space of entertainment. The open east stand, the big yellow stand over there, the party stand is undoubtedly going to be jumping with joy again. And certainly I'm looking forward to that electric atmosphere. As you know, the bull ring, as it's named here at the Wanderers Stadium, is not the bull ring for nothing. The players feel it's this energy, it's this hype, it's this environment where players just really get goosebumps when they've got 30,000 people cheering their name. And certainly for us as the operational team, we're excited to see it jam-packed. I'm sitting here in the media center, and I'm sure a lot of good articles will come out of this room as well. As we move in to season 4, we also will be less than 24 months away of the ICC Cricket World Cup in the back end of 2027. It's really a World Cup which we're so excited to host, and undoubtedly, due to the capacity of the Wanderers Stadium, we'll be hosting some of the best matches, most probably the final as well, which we're so excited about. As you know, the Wanderers Stadium sits in the Golden Triangle of retail in Africa. It sits in the heart of Illovo, Johannesburg. And there's a whole redesign on the cards. There's a whole precinct redesign on the cards. We're the only stadium in Africa that has an 18-hole golf course that borders it, that has a big Wanderers club across the road with all the amenities that it has to offer. And certainly, we're very proud of what this precinct has to offer. And for us to connect it pre-World Cup is something that we're looking forward to. This whole caller drive revamp from down towards the highway right up towards Oxford is something that we're looking to do. And certainly we want to make sure that it's fan-centric. We want to make sure that every visitor that comes to Johannesburg has an elevated experience. Every person that enters the stadium, which no longer is just a cricket stadium, but rather a stadium that cricket's played in, enjoys their experience. I mean, there's so much that happens here on a daily basis with over 1,400 people visiting the stadium for all kinds of things, from yoga to the edge, a cold plunge to a car wash to people having their own offices here. It really is a living, working, breathing stadium. And certainly, as the Betway SA 20 moves from season 4 to season 5 and beyond, the energy of cricket and brand cricket will certainly continue as we build up to World Cup 2027. So we are excited. Don't forget, match number 1 of 2026 is the New Year's Day cricket party. 1st of January, come and support the Joburg Super Kings here. And buy your tickets at sa20.co.za. You can get all your tickets there. Make sure you don't miss out. The stadium's going to be packed. We look forward to hosting you for season 4 of the Betway SA20. sa20.co.za is your place to go.
Welcome to Incredible.
If you ever like wonder why us South Africans are so obsessed about sports, or why we're so good at sports, Jono Leafwright's a fantastic example of that. Just such a lekker guy. I've never heard anybody say a bad word about the guy. I've only known people to talk about how professional he is, how much he cares, and how much he does for sport. Sitting with him this week at the Wanderers, listen to him talk about that place, what's happening at that place, how excited we can be about cricket. From a guy at the front end of things like that, this made me extra triply excited about cricket going forward. Guys, we're going to wrap it up with 2 talking points that I really want to throw past you quickly. These things have popped up in the month of October. We're not entirely sure how far they're going to go or how relevant they are, but I wanted to bring it up. The Test 20 cricket format was something that was thrown around ages ago. Back, Sachin Tendulkar spoke it up a little bit. It's like, T20 is incredible. We all love it. But sometimes it's a bit unfair, especially subcontinent kind of conditions. You bat first, or it's like the too much on the toss. But what if the teams had 2 innings, like in a test, Or maybe we could draw out the drama if they went back-to-back. So then essentially you are playing 80 overs rather than 40. You go double-double. So you can like score big, ball a team out, team comes back, scores big. You see where I'm going with this. Yeah. It's essentially test cricket, but in a T20 limited overs format.
2020.
Gut feelings on that. Start with you, Kat.
I'm excited actually about it. I mean, I know. Traditionally,
yes, I was like, oh.
Oof, as long as it works. And also, I'm sort of like, full disclosure, I'm sort of like privy to some of the information, like some of the ongoings behind the scenes about this tournament, like what they've had to, like what they're trying to do. And I like that it's targeted youth. I think that's probably the exciting thing, is because you look at a lot of youngsters, let's just look at South Africa. When they come onto the test scene in South Africa, they're not at the same level as probably the rest of the world or where they are in shorter formats. So this sort of tournament sort of like would teach a youngster, 17-year-old, how to have the mental fortitude needed to play test cricket while still be, because a lot of youngsters just want to hit the ball. They want to be great at test 20, like the, you know, get it going for the guys who are not really into the sport. But it's like, it needs, teaches you the balance of the two. And what's so key for me was that test cricket is still the end and be all. And if you want to grow that, you need to make sure that the youngsters buy into that. But if they don't have the tools to play test cricket, and AB de Villiers was always somebody who's talented, who could play all formats. You know, when you look at his game, he does not have gaps in either of the formats. But a lot of our guys, you think of a Themba Bavuma, you automatically think test or T20, not necessarily. I mean, you think test and ODI. Yeah. You don't necessarily think test T20 when you think about him. But I mean, you look at a Markram, same thing. You know, he's great at test cricket, but is he great at other formats? You know, those kind of things. But you want to build a system where these guys can actually play all three formats, if they can, but also understand the mental toughness that is needed to play test cricket. So I'm excited about that. If it works, I'm hoping it works. I can't believe you thought I wouldn't hate it.
I'm feeling your sentiments inside. Different.
Oh, come on.
You're like, what are we doing with another
teacher? What are we doing here, man?
Well, I'll tell you what we are doing. This is happening, guys. 2026 is going to happen.
So you can't stop the train.
I just want to ask the question. Is it an international-style tournament like how we have our World Cups?
They will get there.
But it's IPL-style.
It's going to be trialed in a domestic format first, obviously, just like T20 was back in the day.
What's the purpose here? Are we trying to grow test cricket?
Yes.
Or are we trying to make test cricket more entertaining?
No, they're trying to grow test cricket.
Because for me, it's...
I don't know how this grows test. This is very separate.
It doesn't grow test cricket. That's what
for me, it's evolving limited over white ball cricket.
Yeah. So for me, it's where I don't understand where we're moving. Because if we're trying to go test cricket, then let's go back to the traditional format of test cricket, make it 5 days, X amount.
Just give it more air.
Give it more what it needs. We saw with the Test World Cup how people are now buying back into test cricket. But if you're going to add a new format to another new format, which we've... Cricket's got too many formats already. It's got three recognized formats. Now you add the fourth, it's going to be a drain once again. And you're still going to have more players who are unspecialized in test cricket because it isn't test cricket. You're not sitting there and batting for a day or 2 days or 3 days or bowling for X amount of days. You know, I don't think it answers the question. I think it's a money grab exercise.
So for you, the answer to... So for you, what makes test cricket is the fact that you can sit in the dugout for like days. Yeah. That's your differentiator.
Yeah. It's a real battle of attrition. Yeah. Guys, this format is actually short-circuiting my brain because I don't get it.
Why don't you get it? Maybe I can answer some questions.
No, I mean, look,
I've looked into it. Yeah.
Shaz, I mean, just to kind of paraphrase what you're getting at there, you don't think there needs to be another format. There's enough. Yeah. Stop. Let's just keep it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is my reasoning around, like my thoughts around this. I think I can't fight this. I think it's great. Because
you guys are crazy.
No, but
you guys
have killed me. It's difficult.
We're looking objectively.
Purist. I'm a massive purist. Yeah. Right? There's something about a T20 game. As a Joburg Super Kings supporter, especially after last season, you have a slight wobble in the middle order. The game's done.
Yeah.
And then it's the most boring thing on earth. You get a two innings T20 system going. I think it's one of the most exciting things.
That's what you say. That's what brings up the test cricket element of it. Because you could go in there, 20 overs. Let's say hypothetically you make 40, you know, you make 90 runs, right?
For the second innings too.
Okay, yeah. So the second innings, obviously you have to survive certain amount of overs to be able to even because the follow-on is going to be, you know, those things like that. So you make 90 runs in the first innings. Mm. You get a guy like, let's say, Makram, for example. Okay, he's great. He's the only one who showed up in the first test, in the first inning. But you know how many guys you've watched, you're just like, oh, that shot was a bad shot. Ryan Rickleton, for example, is a prime example, just sometimes selects, makes the
bad
worst
shot selection, yeah.
The worst shot selection. That guy gets a second chance in the next half, in the next innings, within the same day. 20 overs later, he's back in there.
I think especially with batsmen.
You guys
have
shocked me. I didn't expect the two of you to back me.
I'm shocked. I'm still trying to make sense of this, but I can't go against my gut. Second chances for batsmen in cricket, I think, because bowlers have another over. They run back to their mark.
Yes!
Batsmen need a second chance a bit more in cricket to really show. And I think, again, like a guy like Markram, okay, and you say Rickleton was shot selection. They're good players, and it's so harsh because they get that one chance. I know it's the nature of the game.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to think big picture. I think this is cool. I thought this would be a great addition ages ago, but then it always comes back. Every time you want to evolve cricket, ODI is sitting there like the unloved child going, okay, now what
for me? Over again gets compromised. That's the only thing.
So this
and
is the
international
thing.
Cricket gets
We all know test cricket's amazing. It's not going anywhere. It's only getting stronger. Don't believe what the naysayers say. Yeah. T20 cricket's given us a hell of a lot, no doubt about it. There's that middle area where I still think one day cricket's beautiful strategically.
You would have liked this to have been a one day sort of format.
But if this works, Shaz, to your point, we can't have more formats. If this works, is this finally the death of 50 over cricket?
So that is the scary part about this whole thing. We add another format and then what happens to 50 over? And then everybody's going to say, we're playing too much cricket. The best players aren't going to be at the best tournaments. I'm going to be playing IPL. I'm going to be playing, you know, Betway SA20. I'm going to be playing 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20, 20.
Test 20.
Because the money's going to get into test 20.
Yeah. And then, I think for me, I get what you guys are saying. Like, that second chance thing is very important with cricket and all of that. But for me, I'm looking at, as my initial point, which is like to grow test cricket, and you don't think it is.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, you watch 15, 16-year-olds play cricket right now. They just want to blitz the ball. There's no thought about ball. It's hit and run. You literally watch junior cricket. It's almost like watching baseball. It's hit and run, and that's it.
Yeah.
There's no thought behind it. You look at somebody like Rassie van der Dassen, for example, who for most people is frustrating when he plays T20 because the way he approaches.
Yeah.
I mean, Alma went through that, but ended up being one of the best players that South Africa has ever produced because of that. Because he has the patience to understand, okay, I may face 10 balls here. I don't have to blitz 8 of them. Do you know what I mean? And young players, for me, I find that, yeah, youngsters, they want to hit 9 out of those 10 balls immediately. Let's hit sixes. If I can hit sixes in 10 balls,
I'm cooking, right?
Yeah. Test cricket teaches you that there's still another inning coming. A lot of what you're doing now is going to matter later on. You need to think about how many overs you need to survive to ensure you don't get a follow-on. You need to ensure, because there's also penalties. That's what other things I've introduced. If you don't survive certain overs, if you don't survive a certain amount of overs, 2 overs are added to the other team. So the other team is going to have more time to bat than you guys. Those are the things that youngsters don't think about. They're just like, I want to hit the ball. So for me, from that perspective, I'm excited. I want to see how it is, because it gets frustrating when you watch the young players just want to blitz the ball. There's no thing. You feel like only the captain thinks.
Is it
youth
focused?
Which bowler?
It's youth focused.
Because that's where it's going to start.
Okay. It's 15 to 19 year olds.
This is where it's going to start.
But guys, this is the inconvenience of this thing. It's like, I'm happy with cricket. We all know we've had a resurgence
Oh my goodness.
Suddenly, we're getting shown something else behind door number 4.
Oh, we look hot, guys.
We didn't even know there was a fourth door, but what's behind door?
It could work. Guys, if it works,
it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. If it doesn't, obviously, we're going
to
be like,
we're going to come back to this conversation in 2 years' time, and we'll see how this thing fares. Final discussion point for this show, which is going to be our longest show ever, and for good reason.
We've
got through some stuff today, but guys, we have to talk about this R360 Rugby Breakaway League that is in the works. I'm going to give you some basic points of information here, and then, because I've got a much shorter answer for this, and I'll see how you guys feel. Okay, so they've apparently got 3 years of funding already, with backers supposedly coming from Saudi, England, and America.
this come 360, through Saudi?
This 360 breakaway thing is essentially, as you can work out, it's like the IPL Live Golf of rugby, yeah, where they believe they can get the top talent in the world and get them to be contracted to breakaway teams. So Mike Tindall, the guy most famously known for playing for England and tossing dwarves in Australia, he's the front of this. He's the face. They're proposing,
put a picture of him there.
They're proposing 8 men's teams and 4 women's teams. Okay. They're proposing 16 unique game days, kind of like the Formula One, right? So the game day will be at an international stadium, but this is the way they want to make it more glamorous. Rather than just playing at rugby stadiums, they want to play at like Spurs football stadium. They want to play at the new camp. They want to play at like big NFL stadiums. So they want to take it and make it huge for 16 game tournaments, okay? Tour the thing around the world. They believe they're going to start in October 2026. They've had initial reactions from trying to target Australians mostly because they want to get rugby league guys in there. Rugby league's gone, not a fuck. You guys go there, you get banned for 10 years. Every major rugby unit in the world has said, if you guys go there, you're not eligible to play for your national team. So therefore, anyone who's a top player right now will not sign because they will not go to the 2027 Rugby World Cup. That is all we have right now.
Tell you what, if I were Mapimpi, I'd be like, sign me up.
I'm going. You know, you've added a new dynamic on that last part.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I'm not in the if I'm not going to the World Cup, let me go get
the bag. Go get my bag. You so said just, Saudi. You had me at Saudi.
Just to give you an indication of how much, the more top end contracts over 3 seasons are looking at around 80 to 100 million rand.
See what I'm talking about?
That's what go get paid, Danny.
But guys, as much as this sounds like a really salacious story and it's really groundbreaking, all these different things, the breakaway formula has become like an old tried and tested story right now. Yeah. You've got a face of it, Mike Tindall, whatever, Greg Norman, Liv, call it what you want.
Yeah.
You've got the outside money, and there's people are looking to back anything right now, right? Yeah. There's money everywhere, but it always comes back to things. You're going to get the Renegades and the fringe guys who are going to sign.
Yep.
Your breakaway league always starts with that. Liv managed to get a lot of current guys because that's just how golf works, because golf's it's a freelancer job.
Mm-hmm.
But as you say, guys like Amakazola Mapimpi, and it's not a slight on him being past it or anything, but he needs to make a financial choice in the latter years of his career right now.
Exactly. Absolutely.
He can play for the Sharks and try hold out for a Bok placement, but he knows he's on the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
He can look at a thing like
Clark. Same.
Fuff. Exactly. Great example.
No. I'm just going back. Sit down.
Let me hold that one.
No.
I'll hold it.
Asian aside, and he's got, I mean, Makazolo Mapimpi and Fuff have talent on their side too, but Ama has age and talent on his side. I think he still has another World Cup with him.
These are the dynamics, right? Yeah. This R360, you look at it and go straight on. You look at this and you go, bullshit, it's not going to work. But then you look at people. If you've got 3 to 5 years left in your career and the current national team coach is not picking you, this is a dream.
Exactly.
I think
especially when you're a Springbok player who knows exactly where they stand. Yeah. Like, if you're an Evan Roos, you still have ambition to make the Springbok team. So you won't take that chance because that's like a cold pack thing for you. Okay, you're like, okay, I still have a chance. I've got age on my side and I can still work on my discipline, which is probably what's keeping him out of the national team. But you've got Makazo Mapimbo's had 2 World Cups under his belt and he doesn't have age on his side. He's still playing brilliantly. I mean,
he's still a name. He's still a profile.
Right. He's still do what Ronaldo did.
So you
get paid. Saudi money. That's what I would do because that ship has sailed.
And for me, it was going to be exciting. I was initially going to say, like, forget about this. But look at our Springboks after the next World Cup. A lot of them, this is going to be an exciting prospect to say, actually, let me 1 or 2 more years. I can make 100 million. I wouldn't be shocked like a seer who's like, after the next World Cup says, actually, I feel like I've got 1 more run in me. Let me go for a year. Similar to what Henri went to do in the MLS, all these players going to the MLS. It's not going to be as highly physical. It's 16 weeks, so they've probably done it around like the NFL type.
And
of
all
vibe.
You just walk is
it's 16 competition days, and there's going to be 2 windows apparently, so it'll be spread out in the year as well.
Yeah, you just go and do PR stuff while you're there. You get paid.
It's a lot like footballers going to the MLS, as you said.
Saudi.
All I'm saying with this is that as much as it's coming out as this big story, Guys, this is rinse, repeat, and so many things have already happened.
But the thing is, because it also, again, it's a reiteration that there's always money in sport. Exactly. If you want to make money, invest in sport. You always find somebody who's willing to take your ideas on. It's been done before. I mean, when Louis Oosthuizen and them went through the LIV Golf route, a lot of people were like, what are you doing? You're killing your career. Louis got a nice, big check, and then you got welcome back.
Louis' daughters are not ruining the decision riding their horses in America.
Absolutely.
And for me with rugby, because of how little positions there are, because you have a limited career in rugby, you can either play Sharks.
Super limited, yeah.
Sharks, and you could be great, you just might not make the Springbok fold. To have another
play for Cheetahs, here's your
way out.
Avenue.
And they're going to get, for me, it's the money when you spoke about it. I was like, that money is going to change a lot of people's lives.
Yeah. I'd be thinking about it.
But guys, final point though, even if you go back to Ifan Rust, right? He might be able to go to France or England and play for them because he's young enough. But that's 4 years or 3 years to get the residency, mm-hmm. to get all those kind of things. He's looking at this going, firstly, it's tough to get in the Springbok team. Secondly, the structures don't feel that I'm worthy of that. The guy can go, you know what, 100 million rand is 100 million rand.
Anywhere.
And
world.
You know what? I'm a professional.
If I'm under 30, I wouldn't be. If I'm under 30 and still have ambition to play for my country, I wouldn't.
I totally get that. But then you also have the honest question, okay? And this will go through the mindset. How much is it actually worth to go through that run? And what if you get injured? Now you tore an ACL, whatever.
Game done.
Yeah.
I think, guys,
you're going to have to weigh, okay, is a Springbok jersey worth a million?
That's where the compromise is.
You know what? I'm going to finish this off. I didn't expect I'd ever do anything with Trevor Noah as a reference. Trevor Noah recently made this point, which I thought was cool. Comedians went to Saudi recently, right? And everyone's like, oh, I can't believe you went to a Saudi comedy festival. Yeah. And Trevor said, you know what, you've got to work it out. How much do I need not to care about what people think? So it always comes back to this whole thing. It's like people are going to say this and you'd be like, I've got X, so therefore I don't care about you.
Yep, boop.
And it's a similar kind of thing. You look at it and go, how much do you need not to have this issue in your head?
Yeah, but you care about what Rusty thinks. I think that's the thing. If you are 29, 28, and you feel like you can make the Springbok team imagine Peter Steph Du Toit is injured. You're like, I am second in line. Like, Rusty thinks.
I totally get that.
Yeah.
But then if it all works out and you end up with 20 million, and a memory.
Listen,
or if it
for
all
me,
works out, you get 80 to 100.
Listen, you are speaking to the converted here, okay?
Yeah, man.
But
sure.
I'm playing the devil's advocate. I'm like, I am a South African who's playing rugby really well, and I'm not even 29 yet. Your conversation is different because since you were 9 years old, you were like, I'm going to wear that Springbok jersey one day.
I tell you what, since you're 9 years old, you also want a Ferrari.
No, you did. But you're like, Springbok pride. Listen, I'd be on that plane tomorrow and say, Mike Tindall, give me a call. Actually, put a picture of him up here. Like, people don't know who he is. Put a picture here.
Yo, man, you might be onto something, my brother.
R360 for 2026, who knows? All I can tell you is that it's been a fantastic show. Guys, October was huge. It was absolutely massive. There's things that we couldn't actually get through today. There was so much. We're going to do the same end of November. There's going to be some other feature shows coming up. We still have another Sports Greatest Photos with Dimitri coming up between now and the end of the year. So much to be excited about. Follow us on social media. We are going to be giving away more tickets for the Betway SA20 at various different stages. Kate, thanks so much for being with us here today. Your insights are always invaluable, and I just really, really appreciate them.
Thank you.
And Shaz, I just like seeing you happy.
Yo, man, football's back. The real football. Chiefs is back. Man United's back. Oh. This is what we've all been praying for. So shout out to October.
Fourth.
No, they're not fourth.
But it's a 16 point split. All of us got 16.
Sixth.
So just a goal difference situation
But we haven't even talked about Spurs. Okay, we have to wrap it up.
No, but also look, sorry, Spurs 16 fans. Points, guys. Like 16 points. You know the game has just started. 22
points looks pretty strong, though.
Yes. See, that's the only person who's allowed to have a conversation
about
this.
Right?
That's us,
right?
We didn't even give Arsenal their due.
I am their due.
We did. Okay. We did. Look at that smile.
We actually didn't. We actually didn't. You know? Like, you know what? I mean, if anyone has a chance of winning it. If only the league was won in December, but also because of your back of the way, how difficult it is to penetrate Arsenal, I think. I think that's really incredible. I think that's what you're doing. And the structures, guys. I feel like out of all of everybody, the only team that is, well, not the only team, because Crystal Palace may beg to differ, and Brentford. Like, I think of the top four teams, Arsenal, you guys are the well-structured team.
So currently. No pressure, Ben.
No pressure. No pressure. I mean, look, last season and this time, Arsenal were there. That's what I'm. That's all I'm going to say. Where were you last season this time? That's all I'm going to say.
Where we needed to be. Right, that's it.
And seasons before that. That's all I'm.
That's it. That has got to be it.
Oh, what a vibe at the game tonight. Well played, Dad. Look at that, Cooks. That's what it's all about, creating memories at the cricket.
Just beautiful to see. But creating memories? What about creating content?
Oh, that's going to be all over social media tonight, Cooks.
I'm still wondering, are they here for selfies or sixes?
They've just seen themselves on the big screen.
Whether you come for your family or followers, everyone's welcome to Incredible. Betway SA20, 26 December to 25 Jan. Get tickets now at sa20.co.za.